of the government. There's a large proportion of the population that supports the genocide. I think that this is going to be difficult for them to overcome. If I had to call a winner in the war, it seems to me that it's going to the side of Hamas, despite the genocide that Israel is perpetrating on the Palestinians. So, but in the meantime, we have to try to do something to stop the genocide and to spare the people of Gaza.
Exactly, we need to get that to stop. Thank you very much. We're running out of time. Mr. Daniel Yegich, author and researcher, joining us from Beirut, and Mr. Paul LaRudy, co-founder of the Free Palestine Movement from Berkeley. Thank you very much for joining us.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. Here we enlighten you with ayahs 36 through 38 from the Surah Nahl, recited by Qasim Razi.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم ولقد بعثنا في كل أمة رسولا أن اعبدوا الله واجتنبوا الطاغوت فَمِنْهُمْ مَنْ هَدَى اللَّهُ وَمِنْهُمْ مَنْ حَقَّتْ عَلَيْهِ الضَّلَالَةِ فَسِيرُوا فِي الْأَرْضِ فَانْظُرُوا كَيْفَ كَانَ عَاقِبَةُ كذبين إن تحرص على هداهم فإن الله لا يهدي من يضل وما لهم من ناصرين وأقسموا بالله جهد أيمانهم لا يبعث الله من يموت بلى وعدا عليه حقا ولكن أكثر الناس لا يعلمون بلى وعدا عليه حقا ولكن أكثر الناس لا يعلمون صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the most gracious, the most compassionate. And certainly we raise in every nation an apostle, saying, serve Allah and shun the Satan. So there were some of them who Allah guided, and there were others against whom error was due. Therefore travel in the land, then see what was the end of the rejecters. If you desire further guidance, yet surely Allah does not guide him who leads astray, nor shall they have any helpers. And they swear by Allah with the most energetic of their oaths, Allah will not raise up him who dies. Yeah, is a promise binding on him, quite true, but most people. Let's know.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines. The World Bank says more than half of Gaza's population is on the brink of famine as Israel's genocidal war enters its 167th day. The World Health Organization says Israel has carried out over 400 attacks on Gaza's healthcare sector during its genocidal war, killing nearly 690 people. And the Palestine Football Association calls on FIFA to impose sanctions against Israeli teams over the regime's genocide in Gaza. Our top story for this half hour, more than 5 months into Israel's genocidal onslaught on the Gaza Strip, the regime strikes keep claiming more civilian lives across the territory. The latest Israeli airstrikes killed a dozen civilians, including at least two children in northern and southern Gaza. Palestinian sources said another air raid on a house east of Rafah City killed at least six civilians. An Israeli strike targeted a house west of Gaza City, killing a mother and her son. Israeli military drones also targeted a group of civilians east of Jabalia in northern Gaza, killing three civilians and wounding 10 others. The Israeli genocide has so far killed nearly 32,000 civilians, leaving over 74,000 injured, 7,000 more unaccounted for, and feared to be dead under the rubble. The World Bank says more than half of Gaza's population, including children and the elderly, are on the brink of famine, calling for urgent action to save lives. The humanitarian situation in Gaza is profoundly distressing. Continuous Israeli bombings on civilian areas have left people without shelter. Let's take a listen to harrowing accounts of some of the displaced.
Support European support and support of the whole world with Israel. They support them with weapons and planes. They mock us and send 4 or 5 airdrops just to save their faces.
We were sleeping a while before pre-dawn meal. However, they bombarded the place. We are displaced persons from the north. We are not affiliated with any political party. No safe place is being left across Gaza.
I am saying this to the whole world. They can see what Israel is doing to the poor Palestinian people. We have been under bombings for 6 months. They are children. What have they done to deserve this? We are tired. We no longer have energy. The children in the south and the north are dying of hunger. What has a baby done to die of hunger?
Sheet metal panels, rubble, and the stones have fallen on my husband. God protected my daughter. I pulled her out from the bathroom. The metal panels and rubble from the adjacent building collapsed on us. Thanks God we survived.
The World Health Organization says it has documented 410 Israeli attacks on Gaza's healthcare sector since the regime's genocidal war started in early October. According to the WHO, the attacks have left over 680 people dead and hundreds of others injured. Israel's strikes have also damaged nearly 100 healthcare facilities and many ambulances across Gaza. It added that 2/5 of Israeli attacks took place in Gaza City, 1/4 of them in North Gaza, and another 1/4 in the southern city of Khan Yunis. The World Health Organization emphasized that the healthcare sector should not be a target in armed conflicts. It urged the Israeli regime to respect international law. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says the enemies have long attempted to cause the collapse of the country's economy, but to no avail. Ayatollah Khamenei added that Iran has witnessed outstanding improvements in various domains in the past year, despite efforts by the enemies to instill hopelessness among the people. He made the remarks on the occasion of the Persian New Year. The leader elaborated on this year's slogan, that is, surge in production through people's participation. He underlined that the growth in production will be possible only with the participation of all people. Ayatollah Khamenei further highlighted the great capacities Iran enjoys, noting that such potential, if properly used, will ensure further economic success. Elsewhere in his remarks, the leader touched on Israel's genocidal war on Gaza, calling it the most pressing issue before the world. The leader added that the bloodshed unfolding in Gaza exposes the true face of the so-called advanced Western civilization. He said the West has not only been standing idly by in the face of the massacre of Palestinians, but it has also been supporting Israel financially and militarily. Ayatollah Khamenei also praised the resistance front, saying the events happening in West Asia have revealed the capacity and power of the resistance against Zionism. He added the regional resistance groups have thwarted the plots of the Israeli regime and its Western backers, especially the U.S. Well, Palestinians in the occupied West Bank have held a funeral for 3 people killed in an Israeli airstrike in the city of Jenin. The 3 Palestinians were killed after the Israeli strike targeted their car. Israeli forces carry out incursions into the West Bank on an almost daily basis, but they've intensified violent attacks across the occupied territory since October the 7th, when the regime launched its genocidal war on Gaza. According to Palestinian sources, nearly 450 people have been killed and thousands abducted during Israeli raids into the occupied towns and cities ever since. Well, more than 5 months into Israel's genocidal onslaught on the Gaza Strip, and the regime strikes keep claiming more civilian lives across the territory. Our correspondent, Moti Abu Mosape, is joining us now from Deir al-Balah in central Gaza to bring us up to speed on the latest casualty figure and scope of death and destruction as the Israeli murdering machine continues with its onslaught on the besieged Palestinians in Gaza.
Well, actually, the Israeli genocidal attacks are still persistent across several areas of Gaza Strip. Let's begin from the central area of Gaza Strip as the Israeli warplanes maintain their attacks and their strikes against all areas and camps of the central area. Here in Deir el-Balah city, the Israeli warplanes leveled to the ground the headquarters of Deir el-Balah municipality. Over the last night, the building was completely destroyed and devastated by those airstrikes. In the meantime, the Israeli artillery maintained its shelling towards the southern part of the same city, of Deir el-Balah city. Till this moment, as we speak, we can hear those explosions booming and resonating here in the central area of Gaza Strip. In the meantime, two residential buildings were completely destroyed after the Israeli occupation forces targeted them in Al-Maghazi refugee camp. In the meantime, also, the Israeli warplanes carried out several airstrikes against at least five Palestinian residential buildings in Al-Nusayrat refugee camp. Nine Palestinian civilians were reportedly killed over those consecutive and plural attacks against the Al-Nusayrat refugee camp, while dozens are still trapped and missing under the rubble of those destroyed houses. While when it comes to Gaza City, as you know, the brutal attack is still maintained and continued against Ashifa and the surrounding areas of the Ashifa Square. Dozens of the Palestinian residential buildings were set on fire by the Israeli occupation forces. In the meantime, thousands of the Palestinian civilians, mostly women and children, are still stranded and besieged inside the Ashifa complex after the Israeli occupation forces abducted the men and the young men from the compound. Those Palestinian families and the Palestinian women and children are experiencing catastrophic humanitarian conditions. They are deprived of their basic humanitarian needs amid the continuous and the chronic Israeli bombings and the Israeli gunfire of the Israeli tanks. They actually released several appeals to the Red Cross Society and the international human rights organizations and bodies to interfere in order to evacuate them, and to stop the imminent death that they are facing these moments. In the meantime, the Israeli warplanes also continue their airstrikes against several areas inside Gaza City, whereas in Ashat, a refugee camp, another residential building was destroyed completely by the Israeli warplanes, while Asaraya Square also witnessed more Israeli attacks and incursions that targeted the residential buildings and the residential and more facilities over that area. Massive destruction actually unfolded over those attacks that are still continued so far. So generally, we are talking about continuous and brutal Israeli attacks and airstrikes that are still hitting several areas of Gaza Strip. In the meantime, the humanitarian conditions are still exacerbating. They are still catastrophic at all levels, by all means, as the Palestinian people are still suffering from the lack, the acute lack of the basic humanitarian needs, basically food, water, and other basic necessities. Over to you.
Thanks a lot. Mochi Abu Musabbe joining us from Deir el-Balah in central Gaza. Well, the Palestine Football Association has called on football's international governing body, FIFA, to impose sanctions against Israeli teams over the regime's genocide in Gaza. The Palestinian Association said six other member nations have endorsed its proposal, asking FIFA to put it on the agenda of its upcoming Congress in May. It added that the regime's onslaught has killed nearly 100 football players and destroyed or seriously damaged the entire football infrastructure in Gaza in clear violation of international law. Palestinian officials said at least five football clubs based in Israeli settlements in the occupied West Bank are members of the regime's football association. They said such inclusion implicitly recognizes Israel's sovereignty over the settlements, which goes against international law and FIFA's obligations. Yemen's foreign ministry has censured the UN Security Council for issuing a statement against the country's naval operations in the Red Sea. The 50-member council discussed the Red Sea this week, despite repeated declaration by the Yemeni army that its operation is mainly on Israel or Israeli-linked ships. In a show of solidarity with Palestinians and against the regime's bloodshed in Gaza, Abdul Latif al-Washali has filed this report from Sana'a.
Ministry has reacted strongly to a statement recently issued by the UN Security Council deploring attacks on vessels linked to Israel, as well as American and British assets in the Red Sea, and demanded the authorities in Sana'a to immediately halt such assaults. The ministry lambasted the 15-member council, saying Yemen's naval actions are only aimed at supporting Palestinians. It said the UNSC move reflects the body's submission to America's interests and its support for the Israeli genocide in Gaza.
The Security Council usually stands by American, British, and Zionist policies and implements their agenda, but at the same time fails to stop the Israeli massacres of the people of Palestine. Therefore, the Republic of Yemen considers any statements from the Security Council non-existent. Sana'a continues its efforts to support Palestinians in accordance with the will of the people in Yemen. The armed forces are also targeting American, British, and Israeli ships as Yemen stands alongside the axis of resistance in the fight against the axis of evil, and we will prevail, God willing.
Officials highlighted that Yemen's operations in the Red and Arabian Seas are motivated by the dire humanitarian situation in Gaza and enjoy support not only from Yemenis but also from the freedom-seeking people worldwide.
The Security Council's statement is futile and is part of American policy, meaning that the Council tries to appease the United States and Britain at the expense of the blood of innocent Palestinians. We support Palestinians not only from the humanitarian angle, but there is a brotherly bond between Yemenis and the people of Palestine. Our actions are in retaliation for the ongoing Israeli genocide.
Meanwhile, the army spokesperson announced an assault on yet another American vessel, Mado, in the Red Sea using multiple missiles. It also reported attacks on Israeli targets in the occupied territories, including the one near Eilat port that has also been confirmed by the Israeli military. The Yemeni army launched its anti-Israel operations in mid-November. It has, though, repeatedly announced that all other ships are free and safe to sail through the strategic waterway. However, recently they have also targeted American and British ships and retaliation for the two countries' aggression against Yemen.
People here say that during US-backed years-long war on Yemen, the UN Security Council turned a blind eye to the war crimes committed against Yemenis. Therefore, they argue that the military action is the only way to deter the aggressors, as Western hegemonic countries only understand the language of force, not dialogue. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
European Council President Charles Michel has called on the European Union to prepare for war and enhance its military capabilities amid escalating tensions with Russia over the war in Ukraine. Max Uli reports from Rome.
The recent European Council President Charles Michel's warning that the European Union needs to ramp up its military production and shift to a war economy mode in response to an alleged threat posed by Russia has sparked international alarm and mixed reactions in Europe. Earlier this week, Michel wrote in an opinion editorial run by a media specialized in EU affairs that if Europe wants peace, it must prepare for war, arguing that although the EU's military manufacturing capacity has increased by 50% since the start of the Ukraine-Russia war in 2022, far more was needed.
Our European awakening is just beginning to take shape, and I would like to tell you what I feel. The time has come to create a real union of defense coupled with a true defense single market.
Michel added that the European Union must finally take responsibility for its own security. For decades, the European Union has relied heavily on the United States and the Western military alliance NATO for its security. Analysts believe that the dependency on external powers by the 27-member bloc has resulted in a complete loss of its own geopolitical and strategic autonomy.
In questo momento,
at this point in time, the EU cannot be militarily independent. It can't adopt autonomous strategies. Today, Europe must create its own defense system so that in 30 years' time, it can really be geopolitically autonomous. If we continue to put national interests ahead, all individual states, including Italy, would lose geopolitical relevance.
Michel's remarks come as Ukrainian and international politicians and experts are warning that ammunition shortages are resulting in the losses of territory to Russia.
Michel is trying to keep Germany under pressure, demanding together with the French government that Berlin provide Ukraine with long-range cruise missiles Taurus. German Chancellor Scholz has so far said no to this request to avoid a war escalation, adding that his country has already provided Kiev with arms for 7 billion euros, while France is struggling to pay for Ukraine military aid.
On Wednesday, the Italian former Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte accused the current Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni of dragging Italy into World War III after having turned the country into an irrelevant, subjugated power. Max Civili, Rome.
And that's a wrap for now. Bye, everybody.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
Supplication on Thursdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who has taken away the shadowy night by His power and brought the sight-giving day through His mercy. He has clothed me in its brightness and given me its favor. O Allah, just as Thou hast spared me for this day, so also spare me for its likes. Bless the Prophet Muhammad and his household, and torment me not in it and in other nights and days by allowing me to commit unlawful acts and to clothe myself in sins. Provide me with its good, the good of all within it, and the good of everything after it, and turn away from me its evil, the evil of all within it, and the evil of everything after it. O Allah, by the protective compact of Islam, I seek mediation with Thee, and by the inviolability of the Quran, I rely upon Thee. By Muhammad, the Chosen, Allah bless him and his household, I seek intercession with thee. So recognize my protective compact, by which I hope my need will be granted. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, decree for me on Thursday five things, which none embraces but thy generosity, and none supports but thy favors. Health through which I may have the strength to obey thee. Worship by which I may deserve thy plentiful reward. Plenty in my state through lawful provision. And that thou makest me secure in the places of fear through thy security. And placest me in thy fortress against the striking of worries and sorrows. Bless Muhammad and his household. And make my seeking his mediation as an intercessor give profit on the day of resurrection. Surely, thou art the most merciful of the merciful.
Ayahs, 30 days. In the name of God, Salam and welcome to the program. A monotheist person not only reflects on the Quran, but also tries to explain the ayahs of this heavenly scripture to others, and make them familiar with its teachings. Explicating of the Quranic teachings, first of all, was the duty of the Prophet and his infallible successors. Every faithful too, according to the extent that they had learned from the Ahlul Bayt, embarked on this heavy duty. So, the ulema, that are Muslim scholars, took over this duty after the occultation of the 12th infallible successor of the Prophet, Imam Mahdi, may God hasten his reappearance, and have seriously continued this job till the present day. Today, this duty has become highly important due to the broad assault of enemies against the beliefs of Islam and humanity. In the 10th episode of the Ramadan special series, we are going to speak about sensitivity towards sin, indecency and evil deeds with a look at Ayah 92 of Surah Tawbah of the Noble Quran. Stay with us, please. Among the characteristics that God likes very much, and every faithful should have it, is qayrat, which means sensitivity towards evil and sin. According to a hadith, God likes qayrat among the faithful. Qayrat means strong defense of dignity, face, family, religion, property, and country. This sensitivity acts like a vigilant police in the spirit of human being, guarding red lines and boundaries. It urges us to be alert against evil acts and sin. A hadith from the Prophet's sixth infallible successor, Imam Ja'far Sadiq, peace upon him, reads, Allah assigned two angels to punish a city. The people of the city were very rude and immoral. They felt no regret for their sins and did not give up their evil deeds. Allah sent them to raise the city to the ground. They saw a worshipper among the people who was praying, crying, and supplicating. One of the angels told the other,
Let us go and ask him again. The other angel said, Do your duty. The first one said, Perhaps. The command has changed as the man may have repented. Wait so that I ask for our duty again. So that angel went back and asked Allah, as he had seen a worshipper among the people. Allah said, The duty is the same. Go to the city and destroy it. Then Allah added, It is true that this man is engaged in worship and prayer, but he's never upset and angry with the sin of others, and disrespect to the divine laws, and his face didn't change. He has no religious sensitivity. The sensitivity of persons towards belief and religion is inevitable. The deeper is one's belief in his religion, the more sensitive he will be toward religion. The opposite of religious sensitivity is compromise and coming short on religious red lines and principles. This is called pliability and indifference. A sensitive person cannot tolerate insulting of divine laws, principles, and sanctities. When God obligates something, he wants it to be done. As we said in the beginning of this episode, Ayah 92 of Surah Tawbah is somehow related to this issue. Nor is there any blame on those to whom, when they came to you to provide them with a mount, you said, I do not find any mount for you. They turned back while their eyes were flowing with tears, grieved because they did not find any means to spend. Those faithful had no means for jihad, but religious sensitivity made them very upset and they cried in grief. Today some people insist on ignoring of religious values and principles, saying, In the modern time, we shouldn't be sensitive and rigid towards values. We should endure all tastes, ideas, and behaviors and give them chance to show themselves. The pliable people think that if person does an indecent act in public, insults sanctities, rights profanities, we should not react. They argue that not everybody thinks the same in society and everyone have their own idea. So, if we want to live comfortably, we have to tolerate them. They even attribute their justification to some Quranic ayahs. For instance, they mention Ayah 185 of Surah Baqarah, part of which reads, Allah desires ease for you, and He does not desire hardship for you. They also resort to Ayah 21 of Surah Al-Ghashiyah. So admonish for you are only and admonisher. But these people should be asked as what is their opinion on Ayah 19 of Surah Ali Imran, part of which reads, Indeed, with Allah, religion is Islam. Or, what do they think about Ayah 73 of Surah Tawbah, part of which reads, O Prophet, wage jihad against the faithless and the hypocrites and be severe with them. We should not forget that tolerance and taking easy of religious laws not only is accepted, but also it is the origin of religion. And if taking easy means to spread Islam through argument and logical debate, it is correct. Yet, one cannot come short and be indifferent against affront towards religious values. We read in history that a delegation came to the Prophet and told him, We will pay allegiance to you with three conditions. We will not perform daily ritual prayer. We will not break our idols ourselves. And let the idol Lot to remain for 1 year so that we can worship it. Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, said, there is no use in the religion that has no bowing and prostration. As for breaking of your idols, if you don't want to break them, we will break them. But on worshipping of Lot, I will never give you such a permission. Sure, the Prophet stood firmly against their excessive and illogical demands and rejected them. It has also been narrated on the revelation of Surah Kafirun that chiefs of polytheists came up to the Prophet and told him, O Muhammad, you obey your religion so that we obey yours and make you our partner in all our privileges. You worship our deities for 1 year, and the following year we will worship your God. The Messenger of Mercy told them, I take refuge with God that I may ascribe and associate to him. Then the Prophet came to the sacred mosque after the revelation of this surah and told the chiefs of polytheists, O you the faithless, I will never worship what you worship.
On behalf of myself and all of my... On behalf of myself and all of my... On behalf of myself and all of my...
Tonight on Exposé, Western broadcast media's narrative of the March 1st parliamentary elections in the Islamic Republic of Iran revolved around made-up stories about Iranians abstained from voting in protest against their government. Meanwhile, the majority of opinion pieces written by prominent Western mainstream media refuse to accept that Iran is a democratic state, bringing nothing new to their reporting tone and essentially rehashing old tales and narratives. And the famine brought on by the ongoing Zionist-Israeli genocide in Gaza, as well as the airdrop charade of aid and expired food on Gaza residents, was another hot topic last week, particularly on social media. Welcome to Exposé, the show that leaves no stone unturned. Hundreds of headlines preceding and following the parliamentary elections in Iran were portrayed on major Western news outlets, but irony rested in relying on the opinion of just one or two citizens to adopt broad front-page headlines talking about the absence of democracy in Iran. Let us hear from Fuad Itayim, our broadcast expert and writer at The Cradle, more about it in Fake News Exposé. The electoral battle for the new parliament and the assembly of experts in Iran, which took place at the beginning of March, revolved around the younger generation of conservatives who succeeded in tipping the scales in many electoral districts.
a fact that did not go down well with Western media. Here is more about this with our broadcast expert, Fuad Itayim. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you for having
Fuad,
me.
To talk about this. What do you have for us about this?
So Western broadcast media has addressed the 2024 parliamentary elections in Iran. And the main message that was propagated by most of these outlets was that somehow the Iranian people stayed away from the ballot in protest against the government.
Okay.
So let's start with the British media outlet Channel 4, who sent its lead presenter, Krishnan Guru Murthy, to cover the news of the 2024 elections in Iran. Mm-hmm. And he decided to basically not focus at all on the issue of the election and resort back to the same old Western media narrative that mm-hmm. rights are crushed in Iran.
Welcome to Tehran. In 2 days' time, Iranians will vote to renew their parliament in a key test for the country's regime. The test being how many people will show up to the polls, and not necessarily who will win. They are the first elections since mass protests broke out 2 years ago following the death of a young woman, Mahsa Amini, under suspicious circumstances after she was arrested for not wearing a hijab.
So Krishnan decides to open with the story of the late young Mahsa Amini, who mm-hmm. died in September 2022. And according to coronary examinations after her death, Mahsa Amini died from cerebral hypoxia, mm-hmm. basically disproving the claims that she was killed by security forces. Despite this fact, he maintains that she died under suspicious circumstances. Typical Western propaganda.
And he opens with it about a feature report about Iranian elections. So this has nothing even to do with the protests that
exactly.
happened years ago.
So making it worse, Krishnan then finds a young non-hijabi woman on the mm-hmm. streets of Tehran, mm-hmm. hoping that she's going to tell him that the police have been harassing her, beating her, threatening her. And the answer he gets is disappointing.
Do you mind me asking, I mean, you're not covering your head. Do you feel worried about being out when you're not covered?
No. Nobody's ever given me any trouble. No one has.
Is that normal in Tehran? Everywhere in Tehran? Or is it just here?
No. I haven't had trouble anywhere.
I don't think he liked what she said, did he?
Not so much. He seems quite unsatisfied with the answer. So what he does now is he moves on to a group of other ladies who they say oppose the policies of the Iranian government. Mm-hmm. Instead of taking advantage of the situation and asking them in more detail why they're opposed to the government, why they'd like to sit out the current election, mm-hmm. He decides to ask them about the genocide in Gaza.
The other thing we're asking people about is the situation in Gaza. So do you think the people feel the same way as the government when it comes to regional politics?
No. Are you kidding with me?
Iranian people like peace. Yes. They want to live in peace.
Yeah.
If you look at our history, all of the time they wanted to be in peace. But the government is the opposite of that.
I don't know how this relates to the Iranian election, which were, by the way, won in majority by the conservative side. Mm-hmm. But it seems that Krishnan failed to find what he was looking for on the streets of Tehran, which was widespread anti-government sentiment. That seems to be what he thinks he's going to find. So he decides to ask about the situation in Gaza and resorts to the idea that Iranians don't care about the Palestinian struggle and only want peace. So his question is about Gaza. So what peace exactly is he referring to? Mm-hmm. Peace with Israel, the illegal occupying state whose flag is painted on the streets of
Tehran. Basically, people just stomp on while walking. And, we're talking about the same state that has openly supported resistance against Zionist Israel for the past at least 4 decades. So I think that question was some sort of a question that he wanted to get out of the people's minds, where they do not support any resistance in the region. But I mean,
100%. And he's asking a few people on the street
exactly,
instead of carrying out
exactly.
a widespread survey. It's
while
obvious.
Talking about an election that the opposition lost.
Exactly. 100%. So another mainstream outlet that propagated fake news and lies was CBS News.
So no surprise there whatsoever.
Definitely not. So CBS News got a hold of Karim Sajjadpour, mm-hmm. A senior fellow at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. Now, Karim, an American-born Iranian who studied at Johns Hopkins and resides in the United States, mm-hmm. here makes sure to spew as much hatred as possible against the Islamic Republic without any facts to back up his claims. Let's hear what he had to say.
It's good to see you again. This was the first parliamentary election in Iran since the sustained mass protests over the death of Mahsa Amini. Does the turnout tell you anything?
It's another reminder, John, that Iranians know they're living under a religious dictatorship that can't be reformed via the ballot box. I think what's particularly insulting for Iranians is that, you know, all politicians lie everywhere, but when you're being ruled by a religious government that rules from a moral pedestal and engages in this level of corruption and repression, I think it's even more insulting than just being ruled by a run-of-the-mill corrupt dictatorship.
We have enough trouble believing polls here in the United States, so I hesitate to put so much or read too much into those opinions expressed in that poll. But do the findings square with your understanding about public sentiment in the greater population of Iran?
Definitely. I think everyone who has been following Iran for a while or has visited the country has noted these popular sentiments for many years now, that, you know, after 4.5 decades of living under religious government, people want to separate mosque and state.
So it's quite audacious claiming that people live in a religious dictatorship in Iran and that the people somehow want to separate mosque and state, even though the entire country revolted against an actual dictatorship in 1979. A dictatorship that was secular and backed by America and Israel and suppressed the rights of the entire population. Mm-hmm. Also, none of the figures that he's using are based on any of the recent election results.
Mm-hmm. I don't know where he's getting the facts from. I mean, these analysts that go on Western media, especially broadcast media, who are supposedly American-born Iranians, but either have never visited Iran or they visit Iran to see family and then return. They don't even conduct any kind of surveys or try to get data from the people, from the public. The least that they could do, ask the communities that they visit and then go on TV and say things like this, claiming that if you are a religious state, then you are a dictatorship. I mean, that literally applies to 70% of the states around the world, and that still is not the fact, not the real story about Iran. But anyways, I want to thank you very much, Fuad, for explaining to us how the broadcast media was basically spewing all these lies about the elections in Iran. Now, ladies and gents, we move on to digital mainstream media. It wasn't easy for Western mainstream media to accept a contrasting scene to what they had been promoting in the days leading up to the parliamentary elections in the Islamic Republic of Iran. Most of the opinion pieces published by major Western news outlets were struck by the public choice in Iran that they practically recycled the same old stories and repeated the same old narrative when it comes to their regime's disapproval of democracy in Iran. Julia Qasim, our mainstream media expert, joins us to tell us more about it. The floor is all yours, Julia.
Thanks, Marwa. So despite the massive Western campaign to against Iran to basically boycott the elections for the Islamic Consultative Assembly and the Assembly of Experts, citizens participated enthusiastically with noticeable lines at the polling stations continuing on until the very last moments of the 1st of March.
Mm-hmm.
So, however, the New York Times continued to spread lies by claiming that many ordinary Iranians were fed up with the faltering economy and the so-called government's oppressive rules and violent crackdowns on peaceful protests, instead of reporting the reality mm-hmm. on the real reasons behind the economic hardships inside Iran, represented by the aggressive U.S. and EU sanctions mm-hmm. illegally imposed on the Iranian people. So, in a piece published on March 1st, 2024, written by Farnaz Farsihi and Leili Nirokazar, entitled "Many Iranians Boycott Vote Despite Officials' Pleas and Roses at Polls," the New York Times claimed that the residents across a range of locations, big cities like Tehran, Isfahan, and Shiraz, and smaller ones like Sari and Lahijan, said in interviews that polling stations in their neighborhoods were mostly empty and only the most loyal supporters of the government had shown up to vote, with many other Iranians choosing not to even leave their homes.
Mm-hmm.
But in reality, Marwa, a small search on the same cities mentioned in this article, and you can see that they lied about the turnout, especially in the capital, Tehran, and mm-hmm. Shiraz and Isfahan. So the New York Times piece was less chaotic than the foreign policy one published on February 29, 2024, just one day before Election Day. The first suspicious part of this piece, writers themselves, where we have no evidence whatsoever if they were even Iranian or not.
Wow.
As the foreign policy claims they were, Saki Nasiri, a pseudonym of a journalist in Iran, and Tuba Moshiri, another pseudonym of a journalist in Iran, who wrote an article titled "Iran's New, Even Worse Hijab Era Has Begun."
Wow.
So the foreign policy here falsely claims that freedoms are increasingly under threat for Iran's female citizens, according to women's rights advocates and United Nations experts, who say that the hijab crackdown is creating a chilling effect on women's rights activism and legitimizing broader gender discrimination. Mind you, these women's rights advocates and UN experts have no names and no positions, which puts such claims at the level of heresy. Mm-hmm. This piece by Foreign Policy continues to spread lies, claiming that Iranian women now cannot drive, cannot do their jobs, and can't even have coffee without worrying about having their cars impounded, being fired, or getting hit with fines if the hijab is not worn or worn too loosely. Yet in reality, if you go on YouTube and research these claims, look at the malls in Tehran, look at the streets of Tehran, mm-hmm. you can instantly see that these statements are completely false and they're nothing but fake news.
I've been there. I've seen it firsthand. It is completely fake news. And as you said, people can just surf the internet and see what Tehran and other cities in Iran look like.
Yeah, I've been there twice too. And in the north of Tehran, women are wearing hats mm-hmm. instead of, and nobody's, you know, impounding them. Police is right there and nothing's going on. Mm-hmm. So you don't even need to really ask people. Just do a little bit of research on your own outside of these obviously biased sources.
Definitely.
So lastly, the foreign policy piece claims that Iran is regularly ranked as one of the worst countries to be a woman in terms of gender parity for economic opportunities, education, health concerns, and political leadership. Guess according to whom, Marwa? According to research by the World Bank and the World Economic Forum, WEF. So that was coming from an American news publication, the same America that does not only suppress women, but now has given the right for men to identify as women while knowing fully well that education and health care are completely free for all Iranian citizens, unlike the USA, where they wrote these dishonest lines about Iranian woman.
Wow. I mean, the audacity, especially of these organizations who continue to control many sovereign states but have never been able to control the Iranian state, for that matter, claim that all these fake news about Iran just to play with words and brainwash the public. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, and they want to begin with their control of Iran by mm-hmm. controlling women, which mm-hmm. they haven't been able to do.
Despite the fact that women in Iran have their rights met years ago, some rights that are not even found in the West. But I want to thank you very much, our mainstream media expert in this segment, Ms. Julia Qasim, for joining us to talk about this pressing matter that we always see whenever there's something happening in Iran, especially if it's elections. Thank you for your contribution,
thank
dear
you.
Julia. And now, ladies and gents, we move on to social media expose. Another topic that was center stage last week, especially on social media platforms, was the airdrop charade of aid and expired food on Gaza residents and the famine caused by the ongoing Zionist-Israeli genocide. Here is Sima Itaim, our social media expert and editor at The Cradle, with more.
Thank you, Marwa. So airdropping aid, much like a placebo, it might make people feel better if they're watching, people who are watching from afar. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, it's a showy PR exercise and it's inadequate. It's pathetically inadequate.
I hear you.
It's useless to the point where it becomes a metaphor and not more for the abject failure of the international community to muster up any kind of meaningful response to such an immense, unprecedented humanitarian tragedy.
I second that. Definitely.
So for the first post, we have a post by Big Brother 7 who criticizes these airdrops, mm-hmm. saying, reports from Gaza say the airdrops of today weren't enough for 100 people. For reference, there are hundreds of thousands of starving people in northern Gaza, with many children already dying due to hunger. The airdrops are just a cruel charade at this point.
I second his opinion. I mean, people who see my Twitter can see that I was very vocal about this, so I'm not going to stop you anymore.
Right. We knew. I mean, we could tell from the beginning. And then the aid killed some civilians.
Yes, exactly. So
it got even worse than what we had expected. Mm-hmm. For the second post, we have by Quds News Network that mm-hmm. quotes the Gaza government media office reporting that the situation of famine is deteriorating, with 2.4 million people experiencing severe food shortages and airdrops, which have proven to be futile.
No, my God.
So along with this post, Quds News Network attaches a photo with a quotation from the Gaza government media office saying that dropping aid from the air and avoiding its entry through the crossings circumvents the root solutions to the problem.
Definitely. I mean, the border is there. Open the border, for the love of God.
Where there are thousands of trucks, not mm-hmm. just hundreds, waiting
Definitely.
To be let through. Mm-hmm. We have another post by Asaf, MD, on X, saying that not only is the amount of aid being airdropped completely insufficient, the most vulnerable of Gaza's civilian population will be unable to access the aid. So he attached a video where a care representative in Ramallah tells Sky News that these airdrops make it impossible for people with disabilities to remain alive.
First of all, there is the issue of accuracy. There is the issue of being so expensive, the limited number that they will have, and the limited content. So it's only meals, while the needs are massive. And most importantly, you only those who can reach physically strong to reach to these aid will be getting them. So women, elderly, women-headed household, people with, unfortunately, disabilities will not be among those that are going to access the aid.
So even people with disabilities are finding it hard to get the least amount of aid in Gaza.
Yeah, the minimum. We have another post on X from a Gaza resident who is currently displaced to southern Gaza with his family. Maysara at whatever 2067, laying it out as it is. Jordan complicity turns Gaza into a hunger game where people have to fight and even get killed to get food. Israel wanted this and Jordan airdrops did the job.
Sadly said by a Gazan who is a resident of Gaza displaced to Rafah. And I think the people that we should hear the most are the Palestinian people in Gaza and no one else outside that besieged area.
So now in response to the World Health Organization's report entitled Gaza Worst Famine Fears Realized as 10th Child Reportedly Starves to Death, Michael Fakhri, who is the UN Special Rapporteur on the Right to Food, posted, Israel has been intentionally starving the Palestinian people in Gaza since October 8. Now famine may very well be already occurring. The only way to end, prevent this famine is an immediate ceasefire. And the only way to get a ceasefire is to sanction Israel. Wow. So that was a first, I think, Marwa. We see a UN rapporteur calling for sanctioning the Israeli entity. I don't think I've seen that before. In order to reach a ceasefire, this is kind of coming to terms with reality, finally realizing that there is no other way around this.
Definitely. Even we were listening a bit from the Biden administration, certain officials saying that they don't condone what's happening, yet they don't have the power to change it, which we really don't believe. But listening to this, having this voice out in the open, especially on social media, is something unprecedented indeed, and all for the sake of Palestinians in Gaza. Thank you very much, Seema, for
Thank
your
you,
contribution
Mara.
And telling us what happened on X, especially on X this time, because it was a very heated discussion concerning whether aid was actually helping the Palestinians or not. Thank you for being here and for your analysis. Now, ladies and gents, we move on to Figures Exposé. The overwhelming majority of civilians in Gaza are dependent on direct assistance from the UNRWA agency, which is also a critical lifeline for other aid organizations working inside Gaza that rely on its aid infrastructure to distribute support. However, a recent opinion poll shows that the majority of the Israeli entity settlers oppose the transfer of humanitarian aid to Palestinian people in the besieged Gaza Strip, where the occupying regime has been waging a genocidal war since October 2023. The findings were published in a survey conducted by the so-called Israel Democracy Institute, saying over two out of the three Jewish Israeli settlers, which accounted for 68% of respondents, disapprove of the transfer of humanitarian aid to Gaza residents at this time, while a large 85% majority of Arab respondents in occupied Palestine supported. Now, when asked, do you support or oppose the idea that Zionist Israel should allow the transfer of humanitarian aid to Gaza residents at this time, with food and medicine being transferred by international bodies that are not linked to Hamas or to the UNRWA, Arab respondents gave an 85% approval to 13% disapproval rate. Left Jews gave a 59% approval to 39% approval rate. Disapproval rate. Now, center Jews gave a 44% approval to 51.5% disapproval rate. And right-wing Jews gave a 19% approval to a swooping 80% disapproval rate. Now, the results of the Israeli entity survey came as the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization, FAO, said in a recent report that 550,000 people in Gaza are currently facing catastrophic food insecurity levels. Now, let us move on to the most notable exposé voices for this week. Imagine you are at home with your wife and children. It's dinner time before you put your three children to sleep. The room is cold, the propane cooking cylinder is empty, and there is no food, no electricity, and no drinking water. This is Gaza. Gaza is starving. Starvation in Gaza is not due to a drought or natural disaster, but it is rather an Israeli entity-made catastrophe enabled by the U.S. Biden administration. Rana Umeish on Instagram shared a video by a Palestinian displaced resident of Gaza who wept while telling us about the last meal he had. For famine to be declared, at least 20% of the population must be suffering extreme food shortages, with one in three children acutely malnourished and two people out of every 10,000 dying daily from starvation or from malnutrition and disease. But in late December, the Integrated Food Security Phase Classification, IPC, said that the situation in Gaza has already exceeded the 20% threshold. Now, as the United States airdropped aid into the Gaza Strip, its parachutes, like those of the other participating countries, brought only a tiny fraction of the aid needed for the 2.2 million Palestinians trapped without food, water, or medical supplies. However, never in a million years would have anyone thought that the U.S. dropped food aid would be expired food. Yes, you heard that right. Let's hear Bobby's voice on TikTok.
38,000 expired meals. The Biden administration just dropped 38,000 expired meals into Gaza. I quite literally don't even know what to say about this. Like, to be that vile and foul of a human being, if you can even call yourself that, to send people who are actively starving to death food that is actively dangerous, that is expired, that could poison them, you are not only, you're not being complicit in genocide. At that point, you are actively taking part in it.
Indeed, they are. Now, ladies and gents, with that, we conclude our expose for tonight. Stay tuned for more eye-opening investigations on Expose. The truth is just a revelation away.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you because you are
a Muslim lady.